Homies, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to another episode of the Superhero Homies Podcast. My name is Quentin, and tonight, today, whatever time you're listening to this, I'm here to bring you a very, very special and unique episode, another shorty here, if you will. Today's topic is one that, unfortunately, needs talking about in so many different ways, in so many different movies or TV shows. This is something that, unfortunately, needs to be reinforced every once in a while, you know? But first, how you guys been, man? What y'all been up to? What y'all been doing? What y'all eating for dinner? That's kind of what's going on nowadays in my household, just trying to figure out what the hell I want for dinner. Anyway, food problems aside, there's been a few interesting things going on. I'm not going to talk too deeply about a lot of them because myself and the homie Caleb, pretty soon here, we're going to do another comic news episode. And we're going to delve into some of these things a little bit more. I'm sure we'll be talking about the name change for the Venom movie, which is interesting, right? And it's very on brand. It's called Venom the Last Dance. And the reason I say it's on brand, it has nothing to do with the movie and everything to do with me. I internalize everything because the last episode I did was with me and the homie Brendan, and we did a whole Venomnibus episode, a whole episode dedicated to Venom and the comic books and the movies and what we think and expect for this third and upcoming film. And a couple of days later, they drop, you know, a new release date for the movie and a new name change. And so at this point, I can't even get upset anymore. Like, it is what it is. But other things I'm sure we're going to talk about on that comic news episode has got to be Invincible Season 2, Part 2. Actually, as of this recording, I recently just finished watching Episode 5 of Season 2. Thought it was great, man. Thought it was really great. Invincible is one of those book series that it seems like it should be a shoo-in to adapt, but you know, the more I think about it, the more I realize, man, it's kind of a complex thing to adapt, just because the longer that story goes on, the more kind of different plots or subplots that the comics introduce. And I think that some of them are tremendous and some of them kind of fizzle out, and I think that Robert Kirkman is probably aware that some of those things fizzled out. Like, I'm definitely going to spoil anything for those of you who haven't read the comic books, but I'll say this, man. I'm not going to put my stake in the ground and say that I think that the TV show is better than the comic books, but man, so far, I think they're definitely keeping pace, which is great, right? And I will say this, I think that the TV show, at least so far, is doing something better than the Invincible comic books. And that is with those storylines that fizzle out. Like, for example, the stuff with Shapeshifter. You know, for those of you who haven't seen the latest episode, again, I'm not going to say anything that's going to blow the lid off. But, I mean, I think that this just does more for the character than, you know, kind of anything that happened in the comics. It's like Robert Kirkman introduced this cool character and concept, you know, play on kind of Martian Manhunter type deal. And, you know, he comes to Earth and, you know, wants to be a superhero. And then he just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. You know, there's really nothing spectacular that kind of happens with him or that character in the comic books, whereas I think that the TV show has an advantage where, like, they're aware of, like, some of the shortcomings with some of those subplots, and so they're kind of being able to clean it up a little bit more, you know, and make it more palatable for TV audiences. And that gives me a lot of hope and confidence, because I think a fan favorite amongst the comics and the TV show, Battle Beast, I mean, don't get me wrong, he has some incredible moments in the comic books, but they come later once Robert Kirkman realized how much people like that character. Like, you can tell by the way that character is written in the comics that Battle Beast was never intended to be like this sort of big burly threat that he becomes, like sort of this, like this ongoing type character, you know? And so, like, when he brings him back, you're like, oh shit, okay, it's good to see him again. And then, you know, they kind of reconcile his story arc, and it's cool, but it definitely feels like something that wasn't initially planned. And I think that the TV show is going to do something really cool with that guy. And for those of you who may not remember, Battle Beast is like the big scary cat-like creature from season one. Beat the shit out of Mark. One of several people to beat the hell out of Mark. But no, Invincible's great, man. Comic books are great. The TV show is great. I can't wait to get more of it. And of course, I'm going to give you guys a full review of season two. I forget who I have coming on for that one. It may be a multi-man pod for that one. Either way, though, it'll be a lot of fun. Be a whole lot of fun. So just to kind of segue into tonight's discussion, I want to talk about something that I've recently had the opportunity to watch and catch up on. So I pretty much drive all day for a living, right? And so I get the opportunity to listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of music. That's pretty much what I do to keep myself from going crazy throughout the day. And I recently listened to the Joe Rogan podcast where he had Zack Snyder on there. Zack Snyder, of course, you know, one of my favorite directors. Overall, I really enjoy his body of work. And, you know, just watching him, Zack, on that podcast, I thought was pretty cool. Got a lot of insight on some things. And got to learn more about Zack. For one thing, the man has a genuine enthusiasm for comic books, which always warms my heart to see a fellow comic book nerd. He does have a true and sincere love for comic books and for the comic book genre. And, you know, I mean, he's one of like those early pioneers to help bring comic book movies out from like this obscure type deal to something that is proven to, you know, make money and also be a form of real art. You know what I mean? Because obviously Blade back in the late 90s did wonders for the comic book genre in the sense that it kind of revitalized the heartbeat. And then, you know, you look at like those early X-Men films and the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films back in the day. And those kind of showed people that, hey, these things can actually still be really good. And, you know, then you go on to like the Nolan era. But even right before the Nolan era, you get like Snyder with the likes of 300, you know, based off of that Frank Miller graphic novel. Clearly, Frank Miller is Snyder's favorite comic book writer. I don't remember him specifically saying that in the Joe Rogan podcast, but it was pretty obvious by his admiration for Frank. And hearing him talk about, you know, adapting 300 and how much he really loved that story. But, you know, around the time that we get, like, The Dark Knight and around the time that we get Iron Man 1, we also get The Watchmen, which I think is another fantastic movie. And, you know, so just hearing him talk about those things I thought was pretty awesome, you know. You know, I think about his body of work as a whole, and, I mean, man, it's no secret for those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a while. You may have heard me say here or there things about Zack Snyder and how overall I really enjoy his body of work. I mean, I'm talking about back from Dawn of the Dead to obviously 300 and Watchmen. I personally really enjoy Man of Steel. I think the director's cut of BVS is still a pretty good movie. I wouldn't say it's great, but I think it's still pretty solid. It's, you know, it still has its wonky bits in it for me, but does a lot of good. The Snyder Cut, I think, is tremendous of the Justice League. But, you know, for every Watchmen or Snyder Cut, you know, you get a Sucker Punch or a Rebel Moon, you know what I mean? So a little give and take with Snyder, it is. But the whole reason why I bring him up in this interview, for one thing, is really interesting. Go check it out. It was, again, really insightful and a really cool look into kind of Snyder's take on things. And he says some interesting things, right? And one of the interesting things he said was something that really caught wind with the nerd internet and really just kind of took off. And it was him talking about how basically how DC should do away with Batman's no cure rule because it's stifling the character's growth. That's more or less what Zach was getting at. And I think that that is a kind of a perfect segue into tonight's topic here. And tonight's topic, guys, is Superhero Homies Commandment Number 1. This is the first time that I've ever really gone in depth and done like an episode-by-episode breakdown of these homie commandments that the homie Kevin and I came up with a few years back. And what the homie commandments are, for those of you who are not familiar with these rules or these concepts, is basically it's the laws of storytelling, and it pertains mostly to superhero genre, but really any and everything as a whole in terms of storytelling. And Superhero Homies Rule Number 1 is one that more so ties into adaptations, which is hold true to the integrity of the characters. And what I mean by hold true to the integrity of the characters is it means to adapt more than just the look of the character, right? So it's beyond just making sure that you get someone who looks like the character, who dresses like the character. But it's to understand and properly interpret the demeanor and personality of the character, right? For example, there's probably 1,700, you know, white male blonde actors who can put on a Captain America suit and call themselves Steve Rogers. But what Chris Evans was able to do and what the writing team and what the directors were able to do were to bring us a version of Steve Rogers that feels like it was taken from the pages of the comic book in terms of the way that Steve acts and thinks and behaves. It was a true interpretation of Steve Rogers. And now I could go on all day listing different characters from various movies or TV shows that did such a great job with the character integrity, where they really did their homework and their research and understood the characters, right? And now to bring this back around to Zack Snyder and his comments about Batman, hey, look, as much as I really admire Zack and his work, I hard disagree on this. Hard disagree about Batman getting rid of his no-cure rule, about it stifling him. I couldn't disagree more. I think that Batman with his no-cure rule, we can look at this from multiple angles, right? So we can look at this from the angle of in-universe Batman and what the no-cure rule means. So for one thing, we've gotten several different comic books that kind of give us a glimpse as to what it looks like if Batman decides to just drop the no cure rule. And most of them, if not all of them, end with him being an extreme psychopath, deranged and unhinged, and extremely dangerous. Like, it doesn't go well, right? And this is something, right, that like a lot of casuals tend to like to say as well, which is why it sounds so off-putting coming from Zach, a man who does have such an admiration for the characters and has a love for the comic books that he would like to interpret such a bizarre rule, right? Or to get rid of such a rule. So for Batman, like, to get rid of his no-cure rule, imagine, you know, most of these superheroes, if they were to just do away with that. It kills the flow of who that character is and really what they represent. Batman is there to kind of provide a better way and to show people that, hey, look, through just fear and intimidation and theatricality and deception, he himself acts as a deterrent, right? And for him to enact his, or for him to just start killing people, like that would send him psychologically down such a dark and twisted path that for him, there'd really be little to no coming back from it. Now, here's the difference, though. You can tell a story where Batman kills someone and the psychological effect that that has on him, but you can't just have Batman kill someone and then just go on about killing and, you know, acting like it's his new norm. Like, if you want to have Batman kill someone, then you have to really build a story around it, and it has to really mean something, and then there has to be, like, a legit fallout from this. Like, what happens with Batman now? How is he now? You know? So for you to just have him go on about on a murder spree is a little, I mean, it's beyond ridiculous, you know? I mean, it really is. Now, granted, as a movie fan, we kind of have to put on blinders, admittedly, and ignore the fact that Batman damn near kills, and I think, I gotta go back and rewatch these movies, man, but Batman, in almost all of his live-action adaptation, he kills, whether directly or indirectly. He is responsible for a lot of murder in these movies. He's responsible for a lot of deaths throughout his big screen adaptations. But, you know, this does remind me of something else. That whole thing, the whole spiel about there being like a psychological consequences for Batman murdering, if he ever did, whether it be on purpose or by mistake, you know, that, I mean, I didn't just come up with that. I actually got that from still the most recent Daredevil run, Chip Zdarsky, pretty fantastic writer. He's still currently writing Daredevil. He may be done with it now, I don't know. But his Daredevil run is pretty darn good. It's really good. And one of the first story arcs in that involves Matt Murdock, Daredevil, doing his normal shtick, and he's beating the hell out of some criminals. And come to find out, one of the criminals that he stopped, which the criminal did try to attack Matt. At least, if I remember that correctly, he did. But anyway, the criminal ended up dying as a result of Matt's bludgeoning to that guy. So Daredevil indirectly, accidentally killed this guy. Like, this guy ended up dying from the wounds he sustained in his fight with Daredevil. Or so that's what we're being told, right? And I love the way that the story is being presented, because now the rest of that story, that little mini arc there, is Daredevil trying to piece together what happened to this guy that caused him to die, really. And me, as an invested reader, I'm right there with Matt, trying to piece together what happened to this guy. But then when you get to like the root cause of it all, we realize the same time that Matt realizes it, there was nothing extraordinary that happened. Matt beat this man and this man died as a result. And it's heartbreaking for Matt, and is a kind of a big what the fuck moment to us as the readers. But they turned that whole thing into a story, and it was just another thing of guilt for Matt to have to deal with. And it was tremendous, though, because this is something that, like, really hasn't been touched upon a whole lot in these comic books, especially, like, with these more grounded guys, like these more hard-hitting, foot-on-the-ground, fist-to-face type superheroes. You know, we really don't see a whole lot of consequential fallout for these ass-whooping they deliver. But in this case, we did, though. So, anyway, my whole point about that whole sidebar there was, it's not that Batman can't kill, it's just that you cannot make that the norm. Like, there has to be a reasoning for it, right? Like, for example, Batman has killed before in the comic books, but no one really bats an eye at it. Why? Because everyone understands why. And I'm referring to Final Crisis. In Final Crisis, Batman, he straight up pulls a gun on Darkseid and says something along the lines of, I have a rule. I don't kill, but I'm making an exception for you. And right then and there, that's all we as the readers needed to hear and understand. We were like, we get it. That makes sense. You got to kill this motherfucker, because if not, shit's going to go down and it ain't going to be good. So situations like that, it's like, we get it. We understand. You have to do something. But even then, they make a note of it. You know, it was Grant Morrison who wrote that story. You know, Grant makes a note of it. Okay, I'm going to have Batman do this thing, but I'm not just going to breeze by this. Like, the shit has hit the fan. Our superheroes are losing badly. They are down bad on the scoreboard right now, and they need to win. And Batman's just gone through hell in this story, and now, you know, he's come out of this thing, and he's got a gun that can kill Darkseid. Is he going to do it? You're damn right he's going to do it. So, you know, you have situations like that, but the whole point about this whole spiel about Batman and Zack Snyder and should he kill, should he not kill, is it's a core concept of the character. Whether you like it or not, that is a part of Batman. And you can't just grow around changing things that you don't like about characters just because it doesn't fit your mindset of what that character should be. It's about who that character is. And superheroes are such an interesting group of fictional characters because more than any other subsection of fiction, superheroes, comic book characters, they are passed down from writer to writer to writer. And you can argue all you want to about who wrote Red Character the best or who has the rights to claim that they are like the superb, supreme writer for a character. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter, right? So many hands have been on the pages that write your favorite superheroes. And so it's more difficult for these comic book characters to have like a core version of themselves than it is for, you know, characters who are written by like traditional writers, you know. So if you have a character who was written by Tolkien or Sanderson or even Martin or, you know, whoever you want to say, like any other traditional type of fictional writer, they have all the say-so in terms of how they view this character and what this character should be like. But with a comic book character, hell, we're talking about Batman right now. Both Bill Finger and Bob Kane have been long dead. And the character of Batman was not finalized even while they were alive. The character was still evolving. And then that's a whole nother debate. What does it mean for a character to evolve? And what's the difference between a character evolving and a character just changing, right? Well, an evolution typically means that you change for the better. A change is just you change, you know? Like, for example, if it's snowing, I'm wearing a tank top right now, all right? So if it's snowing outside and I change from my tank top to just a t-shirt, I just changed clothes, but that's not helping me any. If I put on like a fucking thick-ass jacket, well, that would be more or less an evolution in my clothing because now this is something that's helping me. You know, so it's the whole thing about doing things for the character that makes sense in the moment. And a lot of it also just comes down to being moderate with the character or being in or understanding the time frames that we're writing in. For example, things that these characters, a lot of these characters existed 80 years ago, Batman and Superman, two prime examples of characters who existed 80 years ago, you know, and even our old silver or golden age Marvel heroes were around 60, 70 years ago, and things have changed a lot since then, and there have been tweaks to these characters, changes to these characters, but what's most important is that once they get their defined identity, that you really cannot deviate too much from that. And, you know, we've seen what happens when shit like that does happen, you know, when a character does change hardcore for the better or the worse in the comic books, you know. we've seen Daredevil in the early to mid 80s about to get canceled because people just viewed him as Spider-Man light. And when I say canceled, I mean like they were going to stop printing his books, not like 2024 cancel where where people were mad at Daredevil. I don't mean that. I mean like his books were not selling, therefore they were going to cancel the book. But then they decided to give the book to Frank Miller, a young upstart at the time, and he took it, and we see what he did with it. But along the way, he had to make what can only be described as a lot of changes to the character. So is that character integrity to what Stan Lee had originally come up with for the character? Well, clearly, whatever type of character there wasn't working. Because people just view Daredevil, again, as the lame version of Spider-Man. You know, he swung around with this billy club and he would, you know, kind of make quips and whatnot. And he was an acrobatic type character. And we're like, well, we already have a character like that. And he's selling like hotcakes. And, you know, it took someone to really come around and redefine the character. Let's make him more brooding. We're going to give him a Catholic background. He has that Catholic guilt. We're going to, you know, we're going to have him be more hard-hitting. We're going to have his stories be more serious. We're going to have this character be more grounded. And, I mean, the rest is kind of history, you know? And every successful character, to a degree, goes through something like that. The X-Men have gone through changes like that in their comic books, you know? We've gone from the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby era of the X-Men to the Chris Claremont era. And dare I say, the Claremont era is what all current X-Men comic books, movies, TV shows, video games are based on. With all due respect to the legends, Stan and Jack, their version of the X-Men, they were just the template. And Chris Claremont came along and he filled in the blanks. And that's kind of the trend, right, for a lot of these characters or teams. The creator just kind of makes the setting, creates the backdrop, and then over time you have other writers come in and fill in the blanks, you know? So in terms of, like, character integrity, right, like, you always have to look at this. Who has the character consistently been? And if that character has changed, is that change like a necessary evolution for their growth? Or is this just some shit that somebody wanted to get off because it's the easy thing to do, or because they think that it'll shock people into buying the book or watching the movie, you know? So you also have to think about those type changes. But bringing this around from comic books back to movies in terms of character integrity and like the importance of understanding it right, I always preach, dare I use that word, that character integrity, there's a reason why this rule is number one. So, for example, right, I look at, you know, we were just talking about the X-Men. So we all know who Hugh Jackman, who his Wolverine is, and how iconic that version of the character is, right? And the reason why it works so well is because Hugh Jackman just embodies all of the characteristics of the character. And more times than not, he is written like Wolverine should be written. He has his moments of badassery, short temper, rage, sometimes a man of few words. I mean, just a stoic badass, Clint Eastwood with claws, you know what I mean? In so many ways, that's kind of the way that Wolverine has been written over the decades. And Hugh Jackman, to his credit, embodies that excellently. Now, why am I using Hugh Jackman out of all the positive examples I could use? It's because Hugh Jackman actually looks nothing like the character of Wolverine. Hugh Jackman is like 6'2", very lean build. Whereas Wolverine is about 5'3", stocky as hell. And, I mean, it, you know, it just, it is what it is, right? And that's why I say that when it comes to character integrity, yes, the look is important, but the personality, that is even more important, right? Understanding who that character is at their core is what's most important. And the thing about Hollywood, the thing about these movies and TV shows is that it takes a team of people to get it right. It's going to take the writer, it's going to take the director, and it's going to take, obviously, the actor who's playing that part. All of them collectively working together to understand what it takes to bring this character from the pages to the screen. It takes all of them working together to make this shit happen. And if any one of those people have different ideas or viewpoints or things that stray from the source material, then, well, we end up with something else, you know? Is Superhero Homies commandment number one, hold true to the character integrity, is it a purist commandment? This was something that I really had to sit down and think about here. Because I think it's a good question that should be brought up here. Just because the word purist is often thrown around, right? So I'll say this, right? First of all, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. If I were a purist, I wouldn't like most of these comic book movies at all. Secondly, sometimes I don't think being a purist is bad at all. And thirdly, that question, right? Like, or that statement of someone being a purist, it comes up mostly, not always, obviously, but it comes up mostly within the comic book community. And I'm like, damn, so that's fucked up, right? Because if there were major changes made to any other fictional franchise, then not only would people not really give them shit, but they would be in agreeance. If they cast Samuel Jackson as Frodo in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I wouldn't have known the difference because I never read the books. But it would have been entertaining itself for me to see Sam Jackson talking about, I gotta throw the ring into the fucking fire, motherfucker. Like, that shit would have been fantastic. I love that shit. But my point is this, like, that obviously not good casting, and there would be some things about it that would just break the character's integrity. You know, because typically if you miscast someone by that much, chances are you don't give a shit about the character's integrity anyway. But the whole idea here is about the whole purist mentality, right? Is sometimes you need a little bit of that to make shit work good. For example, the first three phases of the MCU, Kevin Feige was very much a comic book reader. And you could tell the DNA from the comic books were all over the MCU. And then for better and for the worst, the MCU became a huge success. And Kevin Feige's head went somewhere else, and then the MCU took a nosedive, and now we are where we are. And it got to the point where, as we mentioned in episodes prior, where they started hiring writers and directors who were not fans of the source material, purposely doing that, who were not familiar with the source material, who were not familiar with the comic books, who they didn't want the comic books getting in the way of the stories they were trying to tell. What a fucked up sentence that was. And you can tell. You look at these comic book movies that we've gotten recently. It doesn't matter if it's from Marvel or from DC. You know, whether it's from Disney or Sony or Warner Brothers, it doesn't really matter. Like, a lot of these superhero movies now, they forgot what was supposed to make them good in the first place, which is you have a fallback just your comic books. There were times years ago, right, when Phase 3 was wrapping up, and the homie Kevin and I were seeing little small things that were happening within the MCU, things that didn't quite look good, didn't quite look right, things that producers and directors were saying and actors were saying that were red flags to us, and we would make statements like, if X, Y, and Z don't change, then shit's going to hit the fan and the quality's going to take a nosedive. And then they did. And it made us look like we were some kind of Nostradamus, when in reality, we were just fucking watching the weather change. So it all comes down to understanding this. You have to adapt the nature of these characters. Because when you don't, then you end up with a fucking mess in your hands. You know, unfortunately, I hate to keep kicking this movie while it's still down after all these years, but The Eternals. It was recently semi-announced that Marvel has scrapped any plans for an Eternals 2, and I'm like, it took you guys that long to realize you shouldn't do a part 2 to that movie? But anyways, I remember Kevin Feige giving an interview where he was speaking about The Eternals. This is before the movie came out. And he says something along the lines of, yeah, I was really excited to have The Eternals be adapted into a movie because the fan base aren't familiar with them, and so we can make changes to the characters. And I felt like, I felt like I fucking was going crazy, because it seemed like no one else heard that shit but me. I'm like, did anyone else hear this? No one else heard him say that shit, huh? Like, and we're just going to let him say that and get away with it? Like, that's fucking wild. Basically saying we want to adapt these characters because the casuals don't know who they are, so we can make all the changes we want to. And they did, and the movie flopped. Here's the weird part about Eternals, right? And I'm not going to go off too much about this aspect of The Eternals, because this actually applies more to Superhero Homie Commandment number 2, which I'll get into another time. But The Eternals was supposed to be Marvel's attempt at creating like a sleek art house film, you know, with that superhero sci-fi feel to it. And the crazy part about that is that's what Dune just did. Denis Villeneuve succeeded where the MCU machine could not, because Mr. Villeneuve had a vision, and he had an understanding of, oh shit, source material. I haven't read Dune, but from what I understand, he definitely adapted what he could. And I mean, that's what it's about, right? But I don't just want to sit here and just continuously pick on the MCU here. Going back really quick to the whole thing about, you know, is this a purist commandment? Because I never technically answered that question. And I say the answer overall is no, this is not a purist commandment. Simply because it has been, I think it's been proven time and time again that For the best success, you have to stick to this commandment when it comes to these characters. So if you want to have successful adaptations, then you have to understand who these characters are when you write them. And the advantage that superheroes have over like other forms of fictional media is, I mean, there's just so many years of comic books to draw from, right? So much history that you can pull from, you know? And so it's not like you're just stuck to adapting this character from one story or from another. You have thousands. Again, you have thousands of different stories and examples to pull from. And that's kind of the cool thing about adapting superhero movies, is that it's not even so much about adapting a story panel for panel, page for page. is about understanding who these characters are in these certain moments and why they are the way that they are, and then being able to translate that into a story of your own making. I think that's the cool part. Now, obviously, when I get into Superhero Homie Commandment number 2, then that's going to be a different story. That's kind of a pun, actually. Because Superhero Homie Commandment number 2 is about knowing the story that you're telling. So, for example, I don't pigeonhole any superhero homie movie into telling me, you know, an exact replica of a story from a comic book. But if that movie insists on doing it, then it better fucking stick the landing, you know? There's exceptions to every rule, right? There's exceptions to every commandments, even. But just generally speaking, these are the things that work out best for it. I think I'm about done here talking about Superhero Homie Commandment number 1, holding true to the integrity of the characters. Again, this is just a shorty episode, so I didn't want to get too lost in the sauce here, but I figured that just taking a little bit of time to talk about and dissecting some of these commandments would be pretty fucking fun. So, overall, synopsis, just bringing it back one more time. What is character integrity? It's understanding and properly interpreting the demeanor and personality of these characters. And by the way, this does not always include the power set, simply because sometimes things have to be changed or nerfed in order to properly make it adaptable for a film. For example, Thanos was nerfed. The Infinity Gems and Gauntlet, they were nerfed. You know, they were made weaker. Ultron was also nerfed or made weaker. But they're not just changes like that where things are made weaker, you know, so that they can be filmable or adaptable. Sometimes there are changes that they just change the character's power set. Case in point, Kamala Khan. Ms. Marvel, her powers were straight up changed from the comic book. Why? Because as dumb as Marvel is, they realize that her powers suck. She has the powers of making big fists and big feet. She's the worst stretchy person in comic books history. She's the opposite of Plastic Man, who was like a goddamn god. She's just Miss Big Feet and Miss Big Fist. You know, and they were like, that looks awful, even in the comic books. How much worse would that look in live action? And so they had the wherewithal to change that, you know. That's just kind of one egregious example. And there's several more that one could pull from, but we don't need to make this too much of a Debbie Downer of a podcast, but I just wanted to put that in there too. So it doesn't always include power sets, right? But more times than not, you kind of have to understand what the character's capabilities are as well. Because that is a part of who they are, you know. But hey, the caveat to this commandment is if you can, I call it the James Gunn law. If you think you can do it better than the source material, then you go right ahead. But the reason I call it the James Gunn law is because not too many people besides James Gunn have been able to make drastic changes to characters for the better. As a matter of fact, I really can't think of any off the top of my head. Most really great interpretation of characters rely on drawing heavily from the source material. Yep, so understand just the personality and demeanor of these characters, and to bring that from the small screen or from the pages to the big screen, that's what it means to have character integrity. Because if you don't understand who these characters are, then what story are you telling? You know, it's just like any bad story, whether they be in a comic book or in a movie. If your characters have no personality, no characteristics, no traits to really draw upon, then they're just kind of window dressing for the story, and there is no real character driving the narrative forward. And that shit sucks. So, having a strong idea of who these characters are is always going to be super important. Superhero Homies rule number one is number one for a reason, guys. This is the one that these movies kind of live and die on. But I would argue that rule number two is just as important. As a matter of fact, I say they're all pretty important, which is probably why they all made the list of top 10 homie commandments. All right, well, I think that's been long enough for now. I have rambled long enough. Got more things coming down the pipeline, including, like I mentioned earlier, another comic news with the homie Caleb. And I'll also be doing Batman Ninja. Have you guys seen that gem of a movie? Came out a few years ago. I was able to get through the first half of it before my eyes started to bleed, and then I figured I'd walk away. But now I think it's time that I go back and give it another watch through, another fair watch through this time. And I'd be having help with that one. I've recruited the homie Dylan. And we may or may not still be friends after I make him watch Batman Ninja. So that'd be fun. All right, guys, so that's going to be all for now. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this little, what do we call this? It's like this lecture. There we go. This lecture from Professor Q on Superhero Homie Commandment number one. That is all for now. I will see you guys again very soon, though. Love you guys. You guys are all spiffy and whatnot, all cool. And as always, if you guys have any kind of questions, comments, gifts, threats, foods, or supplies, then you can hit me up at superherohomies@gmail.com or any of the social media outlets. Believe it or not, I am always active, live, and listening. I'm like Uatu, except I'm Q, so I'm Q Uatu, the watcher. All right, that's my last corny joke for the night. I will see you guys again soon. But until then, my name is Superhero Homie Q. See you next time.